First, I'd like to apologize for being late, and I don't like it, and I think it's disrespectful to the students and to the Dharma. But anyway, I'm late.
Thank you.
Then, I see some new faces, so I'll just give a brief introduction of what this class is. This class is taught in the old way, which means really no formal homeworks, or no one's keeping attendance. It's to teach you to be a translator. We're in a place in history where there are hundreds of thousands of Tibetan texts. Each one is equal in importance to anything written by Shakespeare or the Bible, like that. And they're just unavailable to people, because there's no one to translate them. And, you know, the few translators there are they're all working as hard as they can. I know, you know, like they don't sleep much, you know, but it's not enough. It won't be enough. So, and I don't believe a translator can be made by homeworks and quizzes, you know. You have to want it really bad, and you have to have a passion for it. And so, you know, I encourage you to come. You don't have to think you can't be a translator because you're not good at languages, or you're too old, or, you know, like that. Anyone here can translate. And lots of people who are translating now came just like you 2 years ago, 3 years ago, 4 years ago, 10 years ago, 15 years ago, and they're good. And they're really contributing, and it's very beautiful, you know. Like Lama Christie's class has these beautiful translations, and you know, I remember the first day she came into class, and she didn't know any kakagas or anything. So anything is possible, and anyone here can do it. And you just start, and you have a passion because you want to help people. So if you really have a drive to help people, you can be a translator. And you don't have to think that you can. You don't have to be good at languages or anything. It's just your heart. We were in Mexico for 2 months in a retreat. And just before we went into retreat, we were in this little village, and we went to a restaurant called Chile Relleno. And we said, what's on the menu? He says, you know what I'm saying? So we ate it. It was really good, you know. And then during the retreat, we tried to make them a couple times. It was like a disaster. I mean, even the Kalamunis wouldn't eat it. They look different from ours, but almost the same. And but they were like attacked our house anyway. And then when we got out, we went back to the same restaurant, you know, and we met the same guy. And we said, you know, we got a piece of paper and a pen, and we said, tell us how to make chili relleno, you know? How do you do it? He said, no can tell. You know, and we said, what do you mean? You know, what do you do first? What do you do second? He said, that's not the secret to chili relleno. He said, it's your heart. You know, if you have the heart, you can make. If you don't have the heart, you know? And he said, you can go in the kitchen, you can stay for 2 or 3 hours if you want, you can watch. They're just making chili relleno, but you won't be able to do it, you know. So if you have the heart, you can translate. And if you don't, I don't think you will ever translate. And if you're not interested in being a translator, stay anyway, come anyway. This is the way they teach in the monastery. The way we're teaching it here is how they teach in the monastery. I think for Westerners, and Americans in particular, the way we do the ACI courses is often better. You know, to force you to do homeworks, force you to do quizzes, you know, have everything, a syllabus and a schedule and all that. I think that's sometimes better, but for this class, we're just doing it the old way, you know. So just come as often as you can, expose your mind to this holy books, you know, and something will happen. Again, when I was in the monastery, I got a letter from Ningbo today, Venerable Ningbo. You know, he was like, I took your advice and I went to Geshe Thupten Rinchen's classes, even though I didn't understand a word of it. And then by the end, I could understand like three words in every class, you know? It's like that, you know? And in a monastery, it was like that. When I first went to the debate ground, I didn't understand 99% of what anyone was saying, but I just sat there for year after year. So just sit, and your mind will change, and your ability will change, okay? It's a holy, holy book. This is the way they teach emptiness in the monastery. This book is how they teach emptiness in the monastery, this particular book. And it's debate. It's by debate. It's by dialectic. It's by hearing two people argue about emptiness, okay? They don't give you answers, they just give you questions. Okay? It's a beautiful way. It's completely different. Okay? Alright, so we'll start. Oh, my own personal agenda. We have to get the refreshments figured out for the five classes, right? So, I don't know, Anna, are you guys willing to like be the people that people come to and talk to? Okay. So, Nama Christy and me were thinking to try to be vegan this term, and maybe that will lead to something more. I don't know, but probably not. I need volunteers to make a vegan snack for everybody each class, and we'll start with the 4th of February, right? Next Monday. Any volunteer for 4th of February? Okay, so Anatole can say. By the way, talk to Anatole and Andriana, and they'll give you tips, right? And that includes one vegan snack for everybody and something hot to drink. Like, I personally have been working on almond milk hot chocolate really hard, and not to say you have to make that, but, hot apple cider is nice, and like that. Mama Christy likes it with caramel. Okay. The following 11th of February, who wants to do? Mr. Jeff. Okay. Oh, and if you need money, talk to Anatole. Okay? It's better if you can, like, wander around and whine at people and try to get someone to sponsor. Okay. Who's the other one?
Naomi.
Okay. That's President's Day, so I guess it'll be special. And the 25th? Yeah, Alistair. Anik really wants to do it. You get to do all the homework. Okay. So, to review, Anatole on the 4th of February, Anton and Diana, Jeff on the 11th, Naomi on the 18th. Okay, there's a lot of people, okay? Don't be wimpy, I mean, it's gotta be nice. Okay. And Anik on the 25th, right? All right? Okay. So we won't remind you. We'll just, and if, you know, we're also tiring, it'll be your fault. Okay. I mean, it's not real bad karma. It's probably like a million years in hell for depriving emptiness students. But, okay. And tonight we have, tonight won't be vegan because we have leftovers from the bake sale, which went really well. We raised $1,600 for airfare for Sarah. So, where's Becca? Oh, yeah, back there. Yeah, so she did that. Okay. We've been on a long debate about what makes a person special when they see emptiness the first time, right? How do they change? How do they differ from other people? We've been on that subject, especially if they have ultimate love in their hearts. So they've been talking about the difference between someone who sees emptiness directly for the first time but doesn't have ultimate love, and then someone who sees it for the first time and does have ultimate love. And they say that a person who sees it for the first time and does have ultimate love becomes a whole new type of being. I like to think of it as a higher form of evolution. You know? Like this person just went from monkey to human, or from tribalite to monkey, or something like that. You know? Like it's that big. In terms of civilization, in terms of the evolution of a species, for one person to see emptiness directly is more important and more rare than a tribulite crawling out of the ocean and walking on land. You see, it's a whole leap in evolution for a whole people, for a whole planet, for any one person to see emptiness. Like, it's more important than all the progress made by mankind in the last 50,000 years, say. Think of that. Think of it that way. It's more important, okay, than all the progress made, if one person can see emptiness, okay? That's a evolutionary leap, which is extremely rare and important in the world. And you are very close. You know, people here are very close. You've had a lot of training in emptiness, and you're meditating. You're doing everything right. See, if you're doing yoga, your channels are opening, especially your heart channel, heart chakra. And there, Lama Christie is teaching a special practice for the next 5 weeks. Very important, very high practice on opening the heart chakra. So you're close. You have yoga, you're doing physical yoga, which can open the heart chakra. You're studying lots of emptiness. You are doing lots of study. The dream, the vision of Tantra, to see the world as divine, that also has one of the most powerful ways to open the heart. So, and you have your daily meditations and your retreats. So you have all the Tunkhyen. Say Tunkhyen. Tunkhyen means favorable conditions. Like, you are surrounded by all the conditions you need to see emptiness. So you're doing fine. And I think I can say without exaggeration that in the world you may be the people who have the Tunkhyen the best. In my mind, in my opinion, you are the luckiest people in the world. You have the best chance, I think. You have everything you need, you see? So in the monastery, things are different, you see? Not everyone's there because they want to be there. A lot of them were put there by their parents. So you have like half the people or three quarters of the people. They're sincere and they're good people and they're fine people and they're working hard, but they're not there. They're there because of their culture, you see? They're there because mom and dad put them there. And they're not there because their brother got killed or their mother died or, you know, someone got cancer. I mean, everyone here has a nice, tragedy in their life that woke them up and brought them here, you know? So I think you have the best chance. So they've been arguing about what makes a person special when they see emptiness the first time. And we got through a lot of argument already. I'm going to review a bit with you. He's promising to go through three sections. He's going to talk about the sutra on the 10 levels. Say, Dode, Sachupa. Dode, Sachupa. Who wrote it? Yeah, Lord Buddha. Someone came up to me recently, it's funny, they said, who wrote the root tantra like that? And I'm like, yeah, I don't know. If it's a sutra, it was taught by Lord Buddha, right? One Buddha. Doesn't have to be this Buddha, actually. Okay? Except for the Vinaya Sutra, the Yoga Sutra, or the Kama Sutra, I guess. Alright. So the Sutra on 10 levels that says that people who are listeners and self-made Buddhists, these are two kinds of people who do not yet have ultimate love. They are not driven by the desire to save the world. They are mostly trying to get out of lower births or something themselves. They're not driven by love for others exclusively. So he's going to talk about how, look, Lord Buddha even said that these people see emptiness. See, because our other debater here has been trying to say that bodhisattvas, people who have ultimate love, differ from these two kinds of people, listeners and self-made Buddhas, because the bodhisattvas are seeing emptiness. And these other two types of people haven't, right? And we say, no, that's not the only thing that makes them special. Those other people have seen emptiness. What's the implication? You don't need ultimate love to see emptiness, okay? When I was trying to imagine a person like that, in my own study with Ken Rinpoche, I don't know, like 15 years ago, I was like wondering, how could you have enough good karma to see emptiness if you didn't have love? he didn't want to do it for everybody. And then someone handed me a book by some physicist, and he was giving a very good argument about why we never step on the floor, why we never touch the floor, and how the floor doesn't really exist, you know? And then I was thinking, yeah, I guess it is possible, you know, like some kind of a person who just kind of comes across the emptiness of things without, you know? And what's he going to do with that? Nothing. He will die with that. But he understands it. He's seeing emptiness in a way. One kind of emptiness, okay? All right. So first he's going to quote this sutra to prove that people without this high motivation can still understand deep reality. Then he's going to quote other scriptural references to support that. And then finally he's going to use logic. These are the two great Buddhist methods to prove anything. Okay? Like, what's Jampa's last name in Hawa? Yeah, Lungri. Like, they named him Lungri. That's so cool, you know? Lungrik means he can prove stuff with scripture, Lung, and he can prove stuff with logic, Rik. So they called him Lungri, you know? It's a nice name. Jampa means?
Love.
Love, ultimate love. So it's not a bad name. Okay. So first we're going to do the author of a commentary. I don't know who that is. I guess it's Chandrakirti's kind of auto-commentary. Mm. The Sutra on the 10 level says that a first level bodhisattva, meaning someone who's just seen emptiness, right? A bodhisattva who's just seen emptiness, they outshine the lower saints, right? Lower arhats, by virtue of their family, but not by virtue of their state of mind. Okay? By virtue of their family, their rik, but not by their state of mind. Okay? What's that mean? If you say this person outshines this other person by virtue of their family, what's it mean here?
They're a bodhisattva.
Yeah, they're a bodhisattva. Tering sangi riksuke. Say tering sangi riksuke. Sangi sesam. It's a very common prayer. It's when you hand the bodhisattva, that is the bodhisattva vow ceremony. When you give someone bodhisattva vows in Tibetan, that's what you say. Today I've been born into the family of the Buddha. Now I have become a daughter or a son of the Buddhas, right? Like that. So they have joined a new family. Can you join that family and not see emptiness? Yeah, okay, you can get ultimate love. What is ultimate love? What's the definition of ultimate love? Huh? Sankhya? Panishya Dinchya? Yamba? Zobachanchya too. The desire to reach Buddhahood, to save other people, right? So it's not like just somebody who's nice, who's willing to share their tricks and stuff, maybe. Okay, it's not just that. Like people say, oh, he's a bodhisattva, he's nice, you know, or they give up things that they wanted, he's nice, you know, it's not like that. It's someone who is really driven to reach a high state in order to help other people. We were just in LA, I mean, you're going to hear this over and over again, right? No, we go every year at Christmas. Why? Because your parents are a high karmic object, you know, we go to see our parents. And to serve them for a week or 2 weeks, you know? But it's always the same thing, you know? Like I went in the bathroom and threw up violently. Mm-hmm. You know, I had this horrible migraine. And I just couldn't, you know? It's so hopeless. Their lives are so hopeless, you know? And it's just like, it's such pain, you know, and everyone's in such pain. And you just got to dinner. You just want to take them out to dinner, but the dinner is like, it's like so painful, you know, and just to hear, just to listen to how life is going. And they're getting old, you know, and every time we go in the last few years, major obstacles to spiritual interest are dropping, you know, like heart attacks and cancer and their friends dying off, you know, more and more friends dying off, you know, And every year the resistance gets less and less, you know, like this year it was like every single member of the family wrote us an email before and asked if we had any advice about this or that. It was really weird. Because, you know, like, at three retreat, they didn't want to talk to us, you know? And so to want to stop that on a grand level, you know? To want to stop death on a grand level. Is it possible to stop all pain? Is it possible to stop all suffering in the world? That's not nice guy. That's something higher, right? That's something, some kind of vision or some kind of determination that it must be possible to stop all suffering, right? So bodhisattvas are thinking like that. They're not sharing their cookies. They are driven to perfect themselves so they can help people, give real help to people, right? And every year you get older, it will become more, how do you call it? Critical. It becomes more, I don't know, you become more serious. Each year that goes by, you see more and more of life. And you get more. So you're lucky because you're young and you'll have all that ammunition when you hit it. You know, you have, when you get serious, the ammunition will be ready, you know, because it'll all be in your mind. Right? Okay. So, first level bodhisattva does outshine these other people by virtue of their family, which means their love. But they don't outshine them by their state of mind. What's that mean? They've seen emptiness too. These other people have seen emptiness too. You can't say the bodhisattva has seen emptiness better, or somehow some other kind of emptiness. There's only one kind of emptiness. If you see it, if you see emptiness directly, that perception has no difference from how a Buddha is seeing emptiness directly. To see emptiness directly is to see emptiness directly. And it doesn't matter who. It's 100%. It's as good as a Buddha seeing emptiness directly, okay? It's like that. But you can't go back into it the way they do. Okay. So is it possible for people who don't have ultimate love to reach Nirvana?
Yes.
Yeah. Why? What is Nirvana? Say, Nyangde Gitseni Sho. Nyangde Gitseni. Say, Nyangde.
Nyangde.
Ki.
Ki.
Tseni.
Tseni.
Shia.
Shia.
Yeah, give it to me. Give me the definition of Nirvana.
In any
language. Yeah, Nyundip Malupa, say Nyundip. Malupa. Pangbe. Sosor. Tango. Nyundip. Malupa. Get that sweet U, okay? Malupa. Pangbe. Sosor.
Pango.
Okay, nyundip means mental afflictions, anger. We went through them, right? Everyone's an expert now. we love to talk about mental afflictions because we don't have to study before. You know, we don't have to prepare anything. We just walk in, say how we went with it yesterday, you know? Okay, so nyundip. Malupa means totally, all of them. Pangbe means got rid of. Then sosa pango is hard, right? Sosa pango. Gok means finished. Tak means because you analyzed something, you understood something. Sosor means one by one, it means the four Arya truths, okay? Basically, you realize that it's possible to get out of suffering, okay? You directly saw that it's possible, okay? Sosa pango. Based on that, you got rid of your mental afflictions, okay? These lower practitioners have gotten rid of their mental afflictions, okay? That's not the debate. That's not the debate. But the guy says, oh, did they do it like non-Buddhists do, get rid of their mental afflictions? Did they get rid of them the way non-Buddhists do?
No.
Right?
No.
What's the guy going to say? He's going to say no. Okay? Well, how do non-Buddhists get rid of mental afflictions? They just get more, they get more spaced. They just get more spaced. Heroin would do it for a while, really. Major amount of alcohol would do it for, you know, a short time. And then just meditating on nothing, just learning to sit and think about nothing, right? It brings you some kind of peace of mind. Heroin, alcohol, and wrong meditation, untrained person meditation. It's possible to get into a deep state of sort of like, I think also a long vacation in Mexico near the ocean might be it. You know? Like swimming every day and, you know, no trouble. And, you know, you'd just be like, you'd feel sort of happy like that. And you wouldn't have any anger. You know, your anger level, your jealousy level, your desire level, you'd eat less, you'd get less anger, you'd have less fights. Everything would be nicer for a while. And that's the problem, right? All the above, heroin, alcohol, what was it? Stupid meditation and trip to Mexico. Now, these things, they suppress your mental afflictions. They temporarily bring you some kind of peace of mind. It's a quiet. I asked a guy, remember, I don't know if you remember, a heroin addict came to the Three Jewels in New York and he wanted to join the classes. And at that time I interviewed everybody. So I took him out to the cheap Thai restaurant, like the $3.95 one lunch, I said, tell me about yourself. And he said, well, I'm a heroin addict. Yes. And I said, I just always wondered, I never tried it, and I wondered what it is, why do people take it, you know? And he said, one reason, it shuts my mind off for a couple hours, you know? I don't have to listen to my mind for a couple hours, you know, that's all. 10 years I've been addicted to heroin, you know? And I just don't want to listen to the thoughts going blah, 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 blah. It makes me crazy, you know? And he'll do anything to get the heroin, you know, like that. So it's like that. You can do it. You can reduce, you can remove mental afflictions temporarily, right? You can quiet your mind, which is why an addict does that. Also an alcoholic, I think. You can quiet the mind for a while. It's just so refreshing and so peaceful for a while, you know? So the example he gives, what he means by non-Buddhist is very specific. These are masters of meditation. These are very high Hindu saints, who are very serious practitioners, and they spend their life meditating, and they're good at it. And it'd be wonderful if we were even close to them, right? But they learn to go from, they call it, say, Shirak. Shirak in Namachen.
Shirak
in Namachen.
Shirak
in Namachen means this. I gave up the 12 cups of coffee a day I used to have it ending. Okay? And I went to about 6 lattes just before Tree Retreat every day. You know? Then at Tree Retreat I went to Tibetan tea only, black tea with milk and cream and salt. And then I dropped that in. And I tried to do herbal tea with milk, which was really gross. But I needed the milk, you know? And then she taught me into herbal tea with massive amounts of honey, which you remember. I mean, that's a jar of honey in there. And then I went to herbal tea with less honey, herbal tea with agave, tried herbal tea with dates mushed in, but didn't work. And then to herbal tea, you know, with still some caffeine, green tea, and then went to, you know, like that. That's Shiraki number 10. I did not remove my desire for tea. You see, it did not remove my desire. It just took me more and more subtle. You see, that's what Shiraki number 10. Shi means peace. Rak means rough. And you just get subtler and subtler, but you're not dealing with your addiction. You're not dealing with your desire, right? It's still there. You're just getting, and that kind of meditation is the same. You get quieter and quieter and quieter and quieter. Then you go back to a highway, someone cuts you off, and you're still screaming. You see what I mean? And you're not changing the root of that. So why did it come up here? Why are we talking about Shidaki Namachan? Are you telling me that those lower arhats, Buddhists, reach nirvana, the end of mental afflictions, by Shidaki Namachan? Just by getting more subtle? Just by going to herbal tea? What do you say? No. Well, how do they remove their mental afflictions? They have to see emptiness directly. It's the only way, right? But the guys just said what? They don't see emptiness directly. Why? Because the Bodhisattva outshines them. And that's what it means to outshine them. Got it? I'll run it backwards. Does the Bodhisattva outshine these other guys?
Yes.
Yeah. Because he sees emptiness in Nidan, right?
No.
You're supposed to say right.
No.
Okay. Oh, so I guess the lower people who got to Nirvana didn't get there by seeing emptiness. You have to say right. No, you're the other guy. Come on, be the other guy. Right. Okay. So how did they get to Nirvana? More and more subtle. They just went deeper, quieter. Okay? That's what they're saying. Okay?
They
don't
really get to Nirvana.
They don't get to Nirvana. No. You can't. Okay? It's impossible. It's the futility of trying to be more calm. It's futile. It's the futility of seeking that alone as a path. It doesn't work. It's not possible. At least you'll get old and die. You see, even if you can somehow keep yourself locked up somewhere where nobody bugs you for your whole life, you know, and the cook is just by some kind of omniscience is making you the food you wanted. Now, you know what I mean? Like, if you could do that, stay in retreat your whole life, avoid people, never encounter an upsetting situation, you would still get old and die. You see, you can't. It's not possible. But do you need to make your mind peaceful to see emptiness directly?
Yes.
Absolutely, right? Samden Dambu, say Samden Dambu.
Samden Dambu.
Nyendo.
Nyendo.
Mikong Me. What's that? Mikong Me. Anyway, your mind has to be in that same deep meditation, Shirak Namachan, to see emptiness directly. So is it useless? No. It's part of the path, but it's not the path, right? And all those band-aid methods, you know, like, what was the first mental affliction band-aid method, trigger? No, in the six. There were six. Huh? What was it?
Eat while sleeping.
Den, I'll give you a clue. Den, mik yo. Den, mikba, or yo. Three synonyms. It was the object, the proximity of the object, you know? So is it a good method to try to just avoid the people who piss you off?
Sometimes.
It's a start. No, that's what Lhasa Lama Khrisi said. That's what monasteries were made for. That's what a Buddhist monastery is for. It's to avoid the objects of desire, you know? There's no ladies there. Supposedly there's no good food there. And supposedly the house is just under a tree, you're just sleeping under a tree, you know, that's the old time, right? So there's nothing there. You avoid the object. Is that a Buddhist method?
Yeah,
it's fine. You need that kind of thing to get to the direct perception of emptiness. After you see emptiness directly, you can have a big house and you can eat whatever you want and like that, because you're not going to have a mental affliction, okay? But you have to, they're useful methods, they're great methods, okay? Okay. Now, talk to me about this statement. The first reason is true because enemy destroyers, meaning people who achieve nirvana, of the listener and self-made types, meaning lower kinds of nirvana, lack the wisdom that realizes emptiness. True or false?
False.
Who said it? We said it. Rang Luk said it. Okay. Let's say Rang Luk.
Rang Luk.
Rang Luk.
Rang Luk.
What's Rang Luk mean? Our side. We said it. This statement is stated by us. Is that possible?
Sure.
Why?
Because it's their own absurd position.
Yeah, we're being sarcastic. What's it in Tibetan? Tengyuan. What's it in Sanskrit? Asangika. Okay? That's why translating these things is so hard. It's so hard. You have our side saying something which is absolutely wrong. And he's saying it with a straight face. He didn't say, are you telling me? Right? He didn't say, yimba ka. Right? He didn't say that. He just said, oh, because people who aren't bodhisattvas can't see emptiness, right? You know, he's just saying it. That's why it's so hard to translate. It's wrong, and our guy is saying it. So it's very difficult to translate and to read, okay? Then he says, oh, I guess they're just like these people who get spaced out and don't get mental afflictions, right? Because they don't reach the direct perception of emptiness, which is the only way to remove unhappy thoughts from your mind. The only way. Permanently. Right? Okay? Why is that? Why is that? What's the big deal? Why is that? Why can't I get rid of anger unless I see emptiness? I mean, briefly. Why? How does a person who has seen emptiness directly deal with their anger differently than a person who hasn't seen emptiness or never heard of it?
They know it's alive.
They know where it comes from.
I think, yeah, they know where it comes from. It means like, Lama Christie, we call it either the shower or the rock. Right? I like the shower, she likes the rock. Okay, so I'll tell you the shower, she can tell you the rock. I used to, in college, I sold myself as a slave to this family. I babysat their kids twice a week to live in their house because I didn't have money. So I would live in their house on one floor of their house, and I babysat twice a week. I was the nanny. And I was a good nanny. And in fact, they offered to hire me permanently when I went to Kem Rinpoche. They begged me to stay for money, you know. But anyway, but the shower, I had to go downstairs to use their shower, you know. So sometimes I'd go to the shower and the floor would be all wet, you know. And it was cold, it's like New Jersey in the winter, you know. And it was really disgusting, you know. Like, why can't these kids just, you know, why can't their parents teach them to mop the, you know, put some towels on the floor when they mess it up? You know, I was all like pissed off, you know. And then one day I went down there and I went in the afternoon to the bathroom, and I walked in there and the floor is all like half an inch of water, you know. And I'm like, God, those stupid kids, you know. And I'm like, and I'm looking outside. Then I realized they hadn't been there all day, you know. And then I realized what. I took a shower, right? And I put the water there, you know? And I'm like, that's not so bad. You know what I mean? That's why a person who has seen emptiness is different. That's why they deal with anger differently. Why? Someone says something to them which is very unkind. Someone says something totally unreasonable and unkind to them. What do they think? Not so bad. Why? I made it. I put the water on the floor. You know, I created this person. Every single syllable, every gesture of the nose, you know, when they talked to me, you know, when they said something unkind to me, every detail. It's not that I created just the words they said. I created the tone. I created the circumstances. I created the weather outside while they were saying it. I created all the sneer on their face. You know, I created everything about them. You know, then you're like, okay, I guess I can't get so mad. You know, you don't get mad at them anymore. And the more you understand emptiness, the more you use this only and ultimate method of removing anger. It's the only way to remove anger, right? Otherwise, you're just coping with anger. Master coper. You know, even most Buddhist books, I can say 99% of Buddhist books I've seen, they're just all about coping, you know, and they don't get to the point, which is emptiness, right? When Lord Buddha taught a book that wasn't emptiness, what do we say about it? He wasn't saying what he wanted to say. He was just around some dumb people. You know, he wrote a book about patience or something like that without mentioning emptiness. It's called Tangden. It's not what he really wanted to say. He just had to go down to their level, right? We say that any Buddhist book that doesn't directly speak about emptiness is not getting to the point at all, okay? All right. This is one of my pet peeves, the thing about the parts, right? And I listen to even very high lamas teaching and it's just flatly wrong. You know, maybe they're doing it for some reason, I don't know. I can't say that, right? I can't say that, but it's just wrong, okay? Is a person their parts? Is a person, am I the sum of my arms, legs, mind, history, thoughts?
No.
course I am. What else am I? I mean, who else is there? What else is there? What's wrong with that?
Just a bunch of different stuff.
Huh?
You said that's just a bunch of different stuff.
Yeah, if you chopped off my arm and my legs and my every other part and you put all that there and what?
There has to be a mind putting it all together.
Right. There has to be the idea that it's getting right. Right? That's the last part. That's the final part. Somebody has to come up and their karma has to force them to draw the outline around this part and say, that's Geshe Michael. That's the last part. If you count that as a part, then I am the sum of my parts. If you don't count that as a part, I am not the sum of my parts. The last part is very tricky. You can't just say it's the idea that you are Geshe Michael. It's more accurate to say the idea forced upon the viewer by their karma that I am Geshe Michael. Okay, then you have everything. Then you have all the parts. Okay? Like that. Until your karma forces you to see their face as sneering and not as smiling, you can't get angry. Right? That's the last part. Okay? So just to get up in a talk and say you're not your parts is not going to help me. I don't think it will help anybody. Okay, so I'm not my arm, I'm not my toe, I knew that. Am I all my parts? And yeah, I think I am. Why not? I'm not the carpet. I'm all my pieces. You know? Okay. So first, this is what it's saying here. As long as you think something is itself, independent of how you are seeing it, you will suffer. Okay? As long as you can't understand that you are making the person angry, you are creating the angry person, then you will collect karma. Why? You will collect karma as long as you think that the angry person is coming from the wrong side. Why?
That's ignorant.
Huh?
It's ignorant.
No, but why will you collect karma?
You'll
react. You'll react. You'll do back to them what they did to you. This is the human history in a nutshell. 50,000 years of mistakes. 50,000 years of ignorance. 50,000 years of responding to violence and violence. Right? Because they don't know anything. And it will just continue. You know, they told us Vietnam would be the last war, you know? And then they told us Korea was going to be the last war and World War II. How is it World War II? There's only one World War. I mean, the Great War. You know, and then it goes on and on, you know? And people keep doing it. We keep doing it. I keep doing it every day. You know, somebody yells at you and you're like, ugh. You know, and then you make karma. And that, the ooh, is another karma. And then you have another person, and then another person, and they don't end. You can't end it. Without perceiving their emptiness, you can't end it. Okay, we're caught up. I'm not going to do it tonight, but I'll start next week. I'll start with, people in the class who are interested are trying to translate little chunks, and then we could teach them, but since we're late, I think we'll just do a couple of pieces. And I sense that it's time to put sugar in you to pep you up. So I have some very good news. Giselle and Ben came from Australia, and they said, we're going to devote part of our luggage to feeding the first translator class. So you have Arnott's mint slices. You have Arnott's Tim Tam original. More Tim Tam. You got, I guess Tim Tam is popular. Crush, Tim Tam Crush. You got, this has got to be Mama Christie's, Violet Crumble. You got, oh, Rather tricky. Cadbury time off. That's the one too many ones. Right? Okay. And you got Mandarin slice. That looked too good to me. I'll give it a name. You got Trader Joe's dark chocolate chocolate. That must be the. Can you start this around? We've got to take a piece of this because this is glass. This is the. This was the. What made one person's airfare to the monastery. Okay.
Oh my god.
Okay, next week, no not vegan stuff, okay? This is your last hurrah. Right. Unless it's soap. We have some more stuff over here, but I'm afraid to make you sick. I don't know. Anyway. We have like 3 weeks extra salt. The last night we were in Mexico. So we put it, we covered the porch with salt, and then all the Coda Mungus came. And I thought maybe they all got sick. I don't know. Maybe not salt, right? Mm-hmm. She says I don't have to try each one. Can't give you food and stuff without trying it. Okay. Here we go. Your pronunciation will improve if you have something in your mouth. De que do? Yeah. De que do? Yeah. What are you studying? Por qué? Say por qué. What's por qué? Bur means Tibet, okay? It's called because bur means to call. And it means you could stand on the Indian border and scream and somebody in Tibet could hear it. And India is the Holy Land. So they call their country by reference to the Holy Land, right? Oh, it's just a stone's throw. You could call Tibet a stone's throw from the Holy Land, right? So Deke Du Yang means the same point is made. In the following word. Okay? It's an idiom. It's an idiom. Okay. We'll start. We'll try to read it again. I don't remember.
Be honest.
One, two, three. Round Rambe Lung Di Le Ni Nian Te Da Rang Sang Ge Lai Yang Chi Tang Che Rang Chi Me Ba Okay. What's a ranga? Yeah. Oh. Who wrote the auto commentary? That's a trick question, right? Okay. No, people have been tricked by that question. Not you guys. Okay. Oh, I'm going to teach you guys some the new. I mean, the older translators. Okay, say Chö Tam Che, Rang Chin, Mei Ba, She Ba. Chö Tam Che, Rang Chin, Mei Ba, She Ba. Say Rang. Ruffles have ridges. I don't have a good trio. I mean, probably made it. Say Rang. Yeah, I mean, if you speak Spanish, right? or Portuguese or anything, it's Rang. Okay, say Ra. It's not with your front teeth on your lower lip. That's the English way. Say Ra. Ra. That's one. It's trilling your tongue on the top of your mouth. Ra. Maybe French also? Yeah, ra. Okay, so Ramshin Nepal Shankarita. People mistranslate this. This could be translation rule number 456. I don't know. Okay? Just because the subject is positive doesn't mean you have to phrase it that way. What's it say? Chirtam Jay means what? Everything in the universe. Everything in the world, in the universe. Rangshin Nepa.
Doesn't have a subject.
Doesn't have any nature of its own. Does this have a nature?
Yeah.
Is this one of the things in the universe?
Yeah.
It is, I mean, it's shortly to disappear.
Yeah.
Up till now, it's one of the things in the universe. Does it have a nature?
Yeah.
Is it a cookie?
Yeah.
We'll go beyond later. I mean, the box says cookies. I mean, so does it have a nature of being a cookie?
Yes.
But this said no.
Nature of its own.
Yeah, of its own. Okay, rangshin, its own. Is it a cookie? Yes. Does it have a nature of a cookie? Yes. Does it have its own nature of being a cookie?
No.
No. I make it a cookie. Okay. Like, no, if it had been made from eggplant, it wouldn't be a cookie, right? You just say no, it's not a cookie. It looks like a cookie, but it's not a cookie. Okay. I make it a cookie, right? Because of my karma. All right. Which is why I gave them away. Okay. But here, a young translator, an inexperienced translator, will make a mistake. What will they say? No, it's just a plain old grammar thing. They will say what? All things in the universe don't have a nature. We don't say that in English. You don't say all things in the universe don't have a nature. What do you say in English?
Nothing
in the universe has a nature of its own. Just be aware. Okay, like baby translators, they get stuck in the Tibetan. And then it doesn't make sense. It's wrong to say all things in the world don't have a nature. That's not correct English, right? How do we translate it?
Nothing
in the universe has any nature of its own, right? Okay? Say, okay, all right. Okay, let's read it together. 1, 2, 3.
She cha wa sa wa nye te te ta ma yin na ni po rang shin me par yong su she ha tang te we chi.
Be careful. Okay. By the way, Aaron, if you see anybody out there called waiting for Lama Christie's class, can you tell them they can come in? They can hang out for... I'll go another 15 minutes or so? Is that okay? Okay. More experienced translators. What does Nyepa mean? What does Nyepa mean? Like even in Tongue, what does it mean?
Literal.
Yeah, or definite, right? Nyepa. Nyepa Mendu means I'm not sure, it's not sure, right? Nyepa means positive, sure, fixed, right? Literal in the study of Tongue.
Mm-hmm.
But here it's a verb, and you won't see it often as a verb, and it trips up a lot of baby translators, okay? What's it mean? What's nyepa? Nyepa. I nyepa'd it. What's it mean?
To be certain.
Yeah, to be certain.
I proved it.
Less baby translators will translate it as to be certain. Really sophisticated translators, it means to ascertain. What's the difference between certain and ascertain? Mm-hmm. You see, it's like that. It means to ascertain, which means what? To see something truly, in a way. I ascertained the truth, right? So it's like ascertain. From certain, right? As a verb. Okay? So,
Sorry,
From this we can ascertain the fact.
Teta mahina?
If it's not that way.
Yeah, and if it weren't that way. What weren't that way? See, we're not only translating at a snail's pace, it's so hard to keep your mind on what we were saying before. And I scrolled it up so you couldn't cheat. If what weren't the way? What?
If it wasn't true that nothing had any nature.
Go back further.
Mm-hmm.
What did it say just before that? In a few words just before that?
The same point of proof,
didn't it? Go ahead. Yeah, if they hadn't seen emptiness. Okay? The Dodesachipa, the sutra on the 10 levels, is saying, when it says what? That they have seen emptiness. The Buddha himself is implying that these lower people have seen emptiness. Because he said what? The Bodhisattva does excel, outshine them by reason of his family, but not
by
reason of his state of mind. Which is to say that those lower people have seen emptiness. Okay? Great. If it were not that way, Deta Mayana, if these lower nirvanaists had not seen emptiness, which should already sound weird to you, why? How can you get to nirvana without seeing emptiness? I mean, come on. You know? Are you going to take a drug or something? How are you going to get rid of your anger? You know? So it should sound weird to you. As soon as somebody says, oh, if these lower nirvana guys had not seen emptiness, and you're like, come on, you know? All right? I learned that from her sisters in high school, right? They don't say get real anymore. They say something else. Anyway, I already forgot. Okay. From this we can ascertain the fact. And if it weren't that way, then they would be without any understanding. That Lupos don't have any nature of their own. What's a Lupo? Be careful here, okay? Be careful here. Here's another translation trick, okay? Lupo is a translation of Pava. Say Pava. Right? Sanskrit Pava. Bhava can mean two different things, okay? It can mean lupo in the sense of a working thing. Is this a lupo?
Yes.
Why?
It's got plenty of
you can use it. That's the definition of lupo. A working thing. Something that does something, right? But lupo can also mean in ancient, in translations of bhava, it can just mean a thing. Okay? So be careful. Be careful. Is he saying those guys that reached nirvana didn't understand that working things had no nature? Or is he saying those guys that reached nirvana didn't understand that anything had any nature? What's he probably saying? He's probably saying anything, okay? We don't see any reason here to talk about working things, okay? Anyway, then they would be without any understanding that things have no nature in their own. This is a really tough translation thing, okay? Here's a really tough translation thing. There's a cheer at the end of here. Okay, so I'm talking to the people who are already translating, okay? There's a cheer at the end of this statement. What does it mean?
Because.
Yeah, because. And in English, we have to take the because and go stick it at the top. Right? You don't say the sky is blue, certain chemicals in the oxygen, because. You know? You say the sky is blue because, right? So you have to go back and take the because and put it at the front. In 99% of the cases, 99.999. Here's an exception. Here's an exception. Okay? It's really important for you guys trying to translate. I mean, this will mess you up. He's putting the cheer before he states what he believes. He's putting the cheer long before. Okay? He's saying, if it were not the case that they had seen emptiness, then they wouldn't see that things have no nature. And because of that, okay, got it? It's totally out of normal, okay? It's tricky, okay? So we got to take that cheer and start the next sentence up with that. And because of that, we don't even know what the next sentence is saying yet. Okay, hang in there, you got 10 more minutes, the sugar's wearing off, I know. Okay. 1, 2, 3. Jikten be de cha tam tel wa ta de da kyan sen tam bo ke de chang shu sen be kyan rang ki le na par che pe kyan su ki na par gyur la. Okay. And because they have not seen emptiness, they have not seen that things have no nature, then they would be people who were free of desire in a worldly way. What's a worldly way mean here? I gave you four choices. Heroin, alcohol, space out meditation, and Puerto Vallarta. All right, okay? Yeah, I gave you four choices. That's what worldly way means here, okay? They would be. And what's that mean? Are they free of desire?
No.
Adverb. Temporary.
Yes.
For the time being. Until they get back on the flight. You know? Until they go back to the airport and like people are screaming at them that they've got five bags and they're all overweight. Right? Okay. Because of that, they'll be free of desire. And then, the bodhisattva who had just reached that first state of mind. Would in fact outshine them. Even that one fact would be there. By virtue of his or her capacity of discrimination. But what's he really saying? And then we'll stop. Okay, you get this and we'll stop. He's accusing the other guy of something. He's accusing, he's making a tengyo, right? A prasangika. He's making an absurdity that must be true if what he said was true. What did he say? What is his main position? These lower people haven't seen emptiness. They haven't seen emptiness directly. Okay, have the reason about that. Are they free of desire?
Yes.
How did they do it? Jitembe. They went to Puerto Vallarta. That's all. Really, that's all. Right? Okay. Oh, they went to Puerto Vallarta. Right. That's why he outshines them. Right. So he outshines them not only in their family, but also by his
state of mind.
Okay? Got it? Even a baby bodhisattva who just got that first state of mind, what's he talking about?
The wish.
It could be the wish. It could be just the wish. He could be saying something really radical. Well, then a bodhisattva who hasn't seen emptiness outshines them by virtue of his state of mind. Okay, got it? Because they're just in Puerto Vallarta. Got it? Like it's a he's really what's it, it's like a huge insult in the scripture. Oh, well, I guess for the bodhisattva who hasn't seen emptiness, God shines them by state of mind. Why do you say that? Because he's got bodhicitta, he's got love. He outshines them. Why? They didn't even see emptiness. They're like getting along at Puerto Vallarta. Okay, got it? Got it? Like it's a big diss. It's a big diss to this guy. Come on, you're really stupid. You know? He outshines. He didn't even have to see emptiness to outshine. He just loves people, which is better than hanging out in Puerto Vallarta because you think it's going to help your mind. Got it? Say nod, okay? Then you get to go. Okay. All right. It's very cool. All right. Is it good to go to Puerto Vallarta? Alistair. Oh man, we gotta talk. There's this huge Indian palace somebody built and they don't use it. It's got like 100 rooms, like for a yoga retreat next to the beach, you know? But anyway, in this totally isolated little village. Anyway, it's important to understand one thing. Like we talked about in the mental, in the Klesha class, right? In the Klesha class, there were six triggers. Six things that can trigger a mental affliction. Five of them, if you can stop them, will give you temporary relief. I have a friend who was in deep depression, really deep depression. And they came to me, this was like 15 years ago, you know? And they said, can you help me? You know, like, I gave them lumsum, I gave them 8 verses, I gave them Kadampa stuff, I gave them Lamlim stuff, I gave them Shantideva, I gave them all this stuff, you know. Then I called them the next week, you know, I said, can I speak to them? And they said, no, they're gone. You know? I said, where? They went to what do you call it?
Called mental.
They went to a mental place, you know, they went. And I was shocked, you know, I said, well, how are they treating them? They're giving them drugs. They give them antidepressant drugs, like big time antidepressant drugs, you know? And then I felt really bad, you know? I had the ultimate answers, and they're going and using antidepressant drugs, you know? And then I talked to the person later, and I said, how do you feel now? They said, good, better, you know? And I said, well, what did it? Was it the 8 verses, or was it Shantideva, you know? And they said, well, actually, it was the antidepressant drugs, you know? And I felt kind of depressed about that. And I said, well, you know, I felt bad, you know. And I said, well, what is it about antidepressant drugs that you couldn't get from Shantideva, you know? And they're like, a person in trouble like that, they just need a break, you know? They just need something to break it for 5 minutes, for 10 minutes, for one day. If they get some space, if they just get in another space for 2 days, 3 days, Then they can take Shantideva. Then they can use Shantideva. But deep in depression, you hand somebody Shantideva, they can't use it. They can't do anything. You need that thing to kick you out for a couple of days. Get a few days space. Then you can start Shantideva. You should have known that. You know. But what I mean is, for mental afflictions, until you can get some space, the emptiness thing might not help. You see what I mean? Like, you have a problem with anger with somebody, and you sit there and say, oh, they're coming from me. You still get angry, you know? You need some peace in your mind. It's not bad to use these other methods, to meditate more, to eat well, to get more sleep, to avoid the person, because you can't handle it yet, even with your emptiness understanding. These are good methods. These are appropriate methods. These are necessary for most of us. And then they put you in a place where you can start to use the emptiness thing, right? So Puerto Vallarta is an option. Okay.
Sorry.